Listeners, you'll remember we had a conversation with Dr. Vivian Gatton and Dr. Michael Costanza, both vascular surgeons from SUNY Upstate. Our conversation centered around varicose veins and the various reasons for treatment. Then we found an article that actually addressed risk factors for varicose veins. Why do we get them? Is there anything we can do to prevent them? So we've asked both doctors to return this morning to talk about those risk factors and then maybe some treatment too. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And welcome back. Risk factors, Dr. Costanza, what are they? Are there things we can do actually to prevent varicose veins?
Well, varicose veins are often associated with having ever been pregnant or being overweight. There's also a significant family history does play a part in having varicose veins.
So if my mom had them, I'm more prone to get them too?
Right. And if both parents had them, you're even more likely to get them.
Yeah, because I can't imagine there are too many of them, too many men who have varicose veins related to pregnancy. So there must be other factors.
That's right. And it also tends to occur more commonly in people that have professions where they're up on their feet all day or they spend a lot of time standing in one position all day.
And there are actually even some old wives' tales, aren't there, about how we get varicose veins?
There are. I don't think any of those have ever really been proven to be true, but you will find people telling you not to cross your legs or keep them crossed or things, you know, wearing tight clothing and things like that.
Uh-huh. Okay. So we don't really need to pay too much attention to those. But, you know, varicose veins, as we learned last week, can actually, taken to an extreme, they can get dangerous. There are people who want to fix them for cosmetic purposes, and then there are people who actually need to for their vascular health. But Dr. Gatton, what are those treatments? We talked about like the easiest case scenario, and we talked about the worst case scenario, but you know, we didn't cover the ones in the middle. So let's do that quickly now.
Okay. Basically, there are four types of treatment. The first and most conservative is compression therapy, which is usually a prescription strength compression stocking, mm-hmm. which will compress the varicose veins and help minimize the symptoms and prevent the veins from getting larger.
Okay. But then what do I do? That hasn't worked.
So then after that, it becomes customized based on a variety of factors, but there's ablation for some of the larger, straighter veins.
And what does ablation mean?
Ablation, we put a catheter inside, whether it's laser or radiofrequency ablation. It's a form of heat through a catheter that goes inside of the vein and actually damages it in such a way that blood no longer flows through it. So it decompresses the pressure of the varicose veins in that leg because that's often a source vein for varicose veins.
So then, in effect, your body just isn't going to use that vein anymore?
Correct.
Okay.
It's basically destroyed with heat.
And so it gets kind of bypassed?
To a certain extent, yes.
Okay. All right. And then what's the next level of treatment?
Along with that or separate from it is called microphlebectomy. Patients used to have long incisions on their legs and actually have them, the entire vein cluster removed.
And that was what we called stripping, right? Is that the kind of?
Stripping or vein removal.
Okay.
But patients who have had varicose veins, they used to have long incisions on their legs. These are very tiny stab incisions, and with a hook, we actually extract the key segments of the varicose veins and decompress them. So it's cosmetically a much more favorable procedure.
It is. And does that have the same effect then that the body just learns how to bypass that where that vein used to be?
These are all inefficient veins. With very rare exceptions, varicose veins are not important for the drainage of blood from the limb.
Ah.
They've become dysfunctional veins. And as long as the rest of the evaluation is okay, mm-hmm. it is quite safe in most circumstances to remove them.
So does that dysfunction then lend to the fact that they can be very ugly?
Well, it's a byproduct.
It is. Okay. It's a whole other conversation, isn't it? All right.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And the fourth form of treatment is called sclerotherapy or injection therapy, where we inject an irritant into a vein and then put compression there to get the walls of the vein to stick together and effectively stop blood from flowing through those veins again.
Huh.
It is clearly quite effective for spider veins as well as for very small varicose veins. In some practices, even large varicose veins are injected, and it can be quite a good form of therapy. It's definitely cosmetically pleasing in most circumstances. There is sometimes a slightly more increased risk, especially with larger varicose veins, of having recurrence or the need for additional work over time.
Well, you've mentioned in a couple of different instances that you use one treatment, perhaps when it's a more cosmetic procedure than in others. I have to think that there's got to be a difference in the way insurance looks at these then, too.
Yes. Even if you have symptomatic spider veins, it's uncommon for treatment of spider veins to ever be covered by insurance.
Okay.
Because most of them will view it as being a cosmetic issue. And that is often one that's really not covered.
Right, because insurance isn't going to cover cosmetic issues, is it? Is there anything else we should know about taking care of these varicose veins? Dr. Costanza, you talked about some of the risk factors. What are some of those things we can do on a daily basis, perhaps, to keep us from having to come and see you?
Well, I think the only thing that we can really control is how much we're on our feet all day.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is a possibility of taking breaks and elevating your legs, I think that will control some of the symptoms.
Or maybe if you work all day, if you at home watching TV put your legs up, does that help at all?
Absolutely.
And what about things like smoking or diet? Do they have an effect?
Well, certainly being overweight does contribute to varicose veins.
Okay.
And I think smoking in general for your health would be a good thing to quit. But certainly overweight does contribute to varicose veins.
It does. Very good. Well, I think we've covered all the bases now on varicose veins. And I thank you so much for dropping by yet again this morning. Dr. Vivian Gatton and Dr. Michael Costanza, vascular surgeons from SUNY Upstate. We've learned even more about varicose veins. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. Committee meetings, ugh, or building a better board with yes and instead of yes but. Well, dear listeners, I don't know about you, but over the years, one part of my job I've liked the least has been committee meetings. I found them often unproductive and even worse, sometimes unpleasant to boot. On the other hand, it sure has been fun watching the SU basketball committee this year, hasn't it? What? You think I should call them the B-ball team? Well, like any good committee, they really know how to work together. And one of the real highlights has been their chief executive, aka the point guard, Johnny Flynn, with his unselfish play and unquenchable exuberance, his love for the game, win or lose. Watching the game the other day, I realized he's a running, jumping, passing, smiling example of someone who knows how to get the most out of his committee. Now, psychologists say there are two major components to any group's work, task and process. Task is obvious. It's the job our group has to do, getting our ball in whatever kind of hoop we've got on our court. Process is how we group members go about our business, which results in a certain kind of feeling or emotional climate in the group, one that either helps us work together to get to the hoop or not. What does Johnny Flynn do? Well, on the task side, he keeps his eye on the goal, presses relentlessly to get there, passes the ball when it's in the committee's best interest, rallies colleagues to do their part, and shares the praise. And what else do we need to say about his process skills, except he's quick to point out someone who's done a good job and has a beaming smile on and off the court that lights up our challenging March nights. What can we learn about leading our own lives from Johnny and company? Well, if you're up for a little experiment, here's a shorthand way to improve our group's task functioning. Next time we're in a meeting, let's remember the goal. And when someone moves in that direction, build on it with a yes and. Something like, yes, that's a good idea, and a build on that, and then add in your best move. Now, if you're in a bad mood and want to undermine the group's work, whenever somebody heads to the goal, block their path with a good yes, but. Yeah, but the problem with that idea you're suggesting is, so no idea ever gets developed. On the process side, yes, but frustrates everybody. While a bonus to the task benefits of yes and is that it builds a good climate too. And while I wouldn't recommend any butt slapping in the boardroom, try some high fives and flash in the pearly whites like Johnny. And remember, we can do this not only on the job, but also back at the ranch, like when your spouse made dinner and you'd rather ignore the clean up the table after dinner task and watch some tube instead. Well, instead of that, try a yes and, like, good dinner, sweetie. Thanks. Let me help with the dishes. I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening. Go SU.